I'm very, very happy to welcome you all to Successful Models of Community and Partner Involvement in TB Control. We have several wonderful speakers with a great deal of experience from the field who will be talking with us about their models for working with patients and communities and bringing those parties into the planning and implementation of tuberculosis control, which I think we all recognize over the last few years is getting increasing prominence and importance in folks out in the field working with patients, and has also been reflected of late in official WHO documents such as the Global Plan to Stop TB. So I'd like to, again, thank you all and call on our first speaker, Vandana Tripathi, who will talk about the design and implementation of community education kits in Romania and Mexico. And Dr. Tripathi is the program director of Doctors of the World, based in their headquarters in New York City. Thank you.
Thanks, Nisha. Good morning. As Nisha said, I will be sharing a model for community mobilization and education that we developed in Romania and then have refined and adapted in Mexico. And to give you just a bit of background, if you're not familiar with Doctors of the World, we're an American NGO based in New York. And in all of our programs, whether it's expanding AIDS treatment access or maternal and child health or TB, we're really focusing on building access to health information and services for excluded communities. So we're looking at communities that are persistently disconnected from their own health systems, whether because they're rural, they're ethnic minority, or particular disease status or behavior. And in TB, we've really tried to focus on marginalized communities. And I want to take a moment to just define what we mean by that. That the first thing that comes to mind, of course, is poverty. But beyond poverty, when we talk about persistently marginalized communities, we are also talking often about ethnic minorities, geographically isolated communities who, as a result, are farther away from health points, including TB care points, often communities with very low rates of literacy and a spoken language that's different from the national norm. So then even if folks are getting to providers, those providers may not speak their language or have any kind of health education material in that spoken language. And these result in documented higher mortality and morbidity indicators. But often, it goes beyond these sort of socioeconomic exclusions, where the communities we've worked with have a long history of political strife as well. So there may be battles over land rights, housing, and these create a distrust of government, which also ends up impacting on the ability of TB control programs to work. And there's the distrust that comes from the community, and there's also documented history of health systems abuses in many of the places we've worked, whether it's active discrimination in denial of services, or it's the passive discrimination of not having someone who can speak your language or information you can understand. So just very quickly, I think everyone in this room believes this and knows this. We know that TB, of course, is associated with poverty due to factors like overcrowding or malnutrition. But these structural inequalities also delay case finding, delay treatment initiation, often lead to patients being lost. And study after study, of course, has shown us that those delays contribute to increased exposure of contacts, many of whom will also go on to develop TB. So before I get into this specific model that we think has been successful, I want to ground it in our overall aims in TB programs with marginalized communities. We've got four key strategies in these programs, and the first is the one we'll talk about today, which is increasing awareness about TB among communities through community-led and owned campaigns, education and mobilization campaigns. And the key tool are these community education kits. But the community side is really backed up and reinforced by the other three strategies that you see: training providers to be better communicators about TB, improving or sometimes creating communication mechanisms between community representatives and representatives of the health system who may have never sat down at a table together to talk about how they perceive each other's barriers or gaps. And then, of course, working with our main partners, the NTPs, to take the evidence from community programs and help the NTPs integrate that into their ongoing approaches, because we want to phase ourselves out, of course, and have the program sustain themselves. So there's a five-step process that we've developed for these community education kits. And I just want to take you through the process and then show you an example of it. And the first step is really important, which is whatever we think we know, to always begin with a baseline knowledge, attitudes, and practices survey. Because often there are a lot of misconceptions or assumptions about what is keeping communities from accessing TV services. And those may or may not be right. The second step is to create very low literacy and usually bilingual education kits for community TB programs. And these kits, the materials in these kits may be print, video, radio, just depending on what channels are most useful for the community we're working with. And then we identify and train community health workers who will actually lead the implementation of the kits. Sometimes these are existing cadres, the community health workers the MOH has hired who simply haven't yet addressed TB. But sometimes communities may be so distanced from MOH programs that if there's really a need to create a new group of volunteers who can begin to address health issues in their communities. These trained community members implement the campaigns. That's a key piece of the Doctors of the World approach, is it's not us, it's really members of the community who have taken on this issue. And then, as noted before, we're reinforcing this community-based education with messages, materials, and training for providers, so that when members of the community are mobilized to go for, check out TB symptoms, they actually are received well and in a sensitive way at health posts. I'm going to have to skip this in the interest of time. It's a very nice framework that the TB and Poverty Group has been sharing, but it'll be in the presentation slides. So the first case study that I'd like to take you through is with the Roma in Romania. And the Roma, who are formerly known as gypsies, have an incredibly long history of social exclusion and discrimination in Europe. They're the single largest minority group in Europe. And that history of exclusion plays itself out in a multitude of ways. The communities have a very high unemployment, as high as 75-80%. Extremely high levels of poverty, partly as a result of unemployment. In Romania, we found that Roma community members had at most one-third the GDP per capita of the national average. Often, Roma community members don't have identity documents, and in Eastern Europe, this is essential to accessing public services, including healthcare. They have less access to education, and one recent census found a 25% literacy rate. In our own communities that we worked with, we found less than that. And there's a poor access to health care, and there are also very serious documented abuses. In some Southeastern European countries, documented cases of forced sterilization of Roma women, for example, and not in the far past, but quite recently. So all of these add up to much higher rates of infant, maternal, child mortality, and overall lower life expectancy. So where does TB come into this? One of the challenges is, again, the TB is not disaggregated by ethnicity in a lot of the countries where we're working. But small-scale studies among the Roma have shown higher rates of TB incidence, sometimes 1.3, 1.5 times higher. Sometimes, as in the first study noted, they're 7 times higher. So we decided to conduct this program that was conducted from 2003 to 2007. We decided to make the Roma a key focus of it. And the program was funded by USAID, the Open Society Institute, and a Global Fund subcontract. And the first step in developing the community education kits was the CAP survey. And this CAP survey was the first time there had been any examination of TB issues from Roma community members. And the findings were very interesting. Less than half of those we surveyed said that they would seek medical attention if they were ill. More than half had no GP they were registered with. So even beyond TB, there was just a fairly widespread disengagement from the health system. And when I earlier was saying that marginalization goes beyond poverty, it was borne out here. Roma community members had the lowest knowledge about TB of any of the groups that we looked at, including the rural poor and including prisoners. And very small percentages were able to name any major TB symptoms. And the last two findings were crucial in designing the community education kits. Only less than half knew that TB is treatable. And that's enormous. If you don't know that it's treatable, you aren't going to seek out treatment for it. And small percentages knew that it's contagious. So there were these were large reasons for delays in seeking care, delays in diagnosis, lack of treatment initiation. So, and I hope that this is fairly legible. Based on these findings, working with local partners, we developed the Romanian TB Education Kit, which was the first application of this model. And it was a series of nested materials, including brochures, posters, that started with a single key message, which is across the top of every single piece of the kit. TB can be cured, because that turned out to be this hurdle in changing anything else about TB behavior in this community. And then below that, there were materials that were designed to illustrate what the symptoms were, primarily in pictures with simple words. There were materials that were designed to indicate the TB treatment was free, but that it must be completed. And then the poster on the right ended up being the centerpiece of our campaign. This gentleman was a cured TB patient from the Roma community who decided that he was okay with talking about his illness and his cure. And this proved to be instrumental because he became part of the community campaign and was someone saying, I'm just like you, and yes, I did have tuberculosis, and yes, this medicine actually cured me, which was not believed by a lot of the community members that we were working with. In addition to the print materials, in Romania, there's a lot of access to media, and we developed a documentary. And again, that key message, TB can be cured, that was the name of the film. And this film was generated for two reasons. One, because there was an excitement around seeing Roma community members in a film that was not a scapegoating, look at how tragic their situation is, but also to ensure that our community health educators had a consistent base of information to generate dialogue in their sessions. So along with those key messages about TB being curable and the availability of free treatment, one very important message was that it's not just the Roma. That, yes, we're targeting your community because you have a higher burden, but this is not a Roma problem. And the film was also a milestone because not only did patients and Roma community members participate, very high-level Ministry of Health people joined in, including the NTP manager. And as I had mentioned earlier, we wanted to reinforce materials that were specifically designed for Roma with materials at GP's offices, at dispensaries. And again, the same message, TB can be cured. And on the right, with more information about patient behavior, infection control, treatment completion. So to implement the campaign, and again, in a community where there's such distrust of the government and of outsiders, and with such good reason, we knew that the campaign had to be implemented by members of the Roma communities. So using local leaders and NGOs, we identified peer health educators, PHEs, who received intensive training, exams, and a script to guide their sessions. And these peer health educators mapped their communities, went out and determined what the sizes of their neighborhoods were, how many people could comfortably come to a session, where it would be best to hold sessions so the community members felt comfortable going. And over the course of several months, this cadre of PHEs reached over 11,000 people through intensive community sessions, which included the film screening and dialogue about tuberculosis. And I was able to attend the first one, where there was a heated debate about, is TB curable? Is TB contagious? And it was incredibly important to reinforce those core messages over and over again. But the reason we felt that this was a successful program was that awareness about TB was increased, but there was also action to support community members living with TB to get treatment. The PHEs, through their sessions, so of those 11,000 people, identified over 600 people with TB symptoms and helped escort them, helped them get access to diagnosis and treatment. This led to 49 confirmed TB cases being identified, and the PHEs were able to maintain the relationships with many of the patients through treatment, and in fact, in some cases, work out a waiver with the TB program to help provide community-based treatment support. And the nice thing about this being so much led by the community was the ripple effect that it was able to have. A core group of the PHEs were supported by Doctors of the World to form their own NGO. And this continues to work to provide health education, but more importantly, perhaps, to conduct advocacy based on the facts on the ground, based on their experiences trying to help community members access services, conduct advocacy with the health system. This is what happens when someone from this community tries to go and get a TB test or another health service. We also advocated in Romania. The government established a really great job, which is a Roma health mediator, and hadn't necessarily hired quite enough folks in that position. And we advocated for the hiring of the strongest PHEs as Roma health mediators, both to help them sustain their work, but to infuse a group of community TB experts into the MOH, which really hadn't been there before. And then in addition to the numbers of people educated, the numbers of cases identified, we did also do an end line cap. And exposed here is not to TB, but to the educational intervention. And we found significant increases in knowledge about symptoms, which is what's primarily shown here, but also in knowledge about the availability of treatment and in attitudes towards seeking treatment. So we felt that this was quite a robust model for community-led TB education and for the mobilization of community members to seek TB care. So very quickly to close, we've just begun the process of replicating the community education kit model in Mexico. And this is a project that's supported by USAID and by the Alcoa Foundation. And in Mexico has a phenomenal TB program, obviously with a lot of great successes. The state that we were focusing on, Chiapas, however, is a bit of an outlier. It's a poor state, it's quite rural, and it's got a lot of the indigenous communities of Mexico live there, the Mayan communities. And there's a long history of political conflict there, and you may be aware of the Zapatista movement, which was sort of an uprising in the mid-90s, which led to a number of communities declaring themselves autonomous from the Mexican government. So it very much fits the profile of marginalization that we talked about at the beginning. And whether indigenous communities identify with the government or not, they share great health disparities compared to the Mexican norm. So you have the lowest literacy rates, the worst access to clean water and other basic infrastructure, second lowest income per capita in Mexico, and, you know, higher infant mortality rates, higher disease burden, a much lower doctor-to-community patient ratio than the Mexican norm. And TB data is tricky from these communities. They're very rural. They're quite spread apart. It's not clear how many cases are being picked up of the true TB burden. But even looking at the official data, we can see that the incidence was double the national rate, and the mortality was three times the national rate in 2004. Local NGOs have done studies that estimate that perhaps a quarter of TB cases are actually being identified. So in this community, we began again with a CAP survey, and the findings were mixed. There was actually higher knowledge about TB in some ways, but a lot of misconceptions, including about how it's spread, including about whether or not it's curable. And we found not only a significant fear of rejection should one's TB status be known, but a lot of really good reasons that community members were abandoning treatment. They were very far from treatment points. The costs that they incurred in getting TB treatment were high. And the length of treatment felt like a burden. So in this case, it's a bit different from the Romania setting because the Mexican NTP has great IEC materials, really strong tools for community outreach. So here we were adapting those tools so that the images, the messages, and the language could really fit the Mayan context. And you can see the visuals, but we were also, for the first time, creating materials that were in Tzeltal, which is one of the most commonly spoken languages there. And these materials were distributed through a different means than in Romania. In Mexico, there is an amazing, in a lot of Latin America, there's a wonderful community network of promotores de salud, health promoters who are engaged already in their communities on a wide range of issues, agriculture, health, human rights, and they work through local unions, through local organizations. So in Mexico, we really identified through local NGOs existing promotores who had an interest in integrating TB into their ongoing work. and we felt that this would be more sustainable than creating a new cadre of promotores. So the promotores have been trained through manuals that were developed specifically for them, and are now conducting TB education sessions using the kits that were designed in Mexico. And this fall have launched a community TB care pilot, which will go from education and referral of people with symptoms to sputum collection in the communities, to provision of DOT in the communities as well. And I hope that next year we'll be able to share the results from that. So to close, we have developed quite a range of community TB kit materials and would love to work with partners to bring those to new places. But I just want to share some key lessons that we learned as we figured out how to do this. And the first is what I've said a couple of times, that it was essential to begin with local research, to build our materials on realities and not our own assumptions. And it was very important to come up with some key messages that were repeated throughout every single material that was produced, and to use a consistent audiovisual brand, you know, something that would trigger for people, oh, this is the TB campaign, and with very clear information on where to go for services. We found that it was very helpful to field test our materials because things that seemed clear to us were sometimes really abstruse to the community members. And it was also very helpful to create backup job aids, bilingual dictionaries and other tools that providers could use when community members did come to them. And then the last two points were less obvious to us at the beginning, that it was really important to link these campaigns to the actual identification of TB patients and to real support to those people to get to TB care, so that it wasn't just about information and putting the burden entirely on the community members. And then finally, when community health workers were going above and beyond to identify patients, to take them to care, perhaps to help them through months of treatment, to measure that, so that that contribution could be shared back with NTPs to advocate for the inclusion of these types of community resources in TB control programs. And so we've been really pleased with the partnership that has come out of these community-led campaigns, to the point where very poor communities were contributing enormous in-kind resources to enable trainings to happen, to host community education sessions, and to support TB patients. So that was the experience we wanted to share. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much, Dr. Tripathi. Are there any questions? We have time for a few questions now, please. And actually, if you wouldn't mind stepping to the microphone so we can all hear. Okay. Try very hard.
Mm-hmm. Because you are saying that the community don't trust the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
How, what's wrong as doctors of the world? Mm-hmm. What did you do so that at least when you pull out, there'll be less of the community?
Sure. That's
and
a
second.
Okay. Yep.
You did capsule in the beginning.
Yep.
And then you told us that there was an increase in the awareness. Did you do a post?
Yes. Yes, so the second one is a yes. There was, we repeated the CAP survey among a random sample of people who hadn't been involved in the program and people who had. So that's what the increases are based on, is comparing the beginning and the end and comparing exposed and unexposed communities. Your first question is really important. And there are a number of strategies that we tried to use to promote sustainability and to address this trust issue. One was having events that brought together community members and NTP members. So the launch of the Roma campaign was attended by really high-level people from the NTP who sat down with Roma educators and community members and were filmed, it was on the TV news, it was in the papers, and it was this illustration of a willingness to work together. That helped us create a little bit more of an enabling environment. The other two other really key pieces on sustainability were, well, three. One, giving everything that was developed was given over to the NTP so they could continue to apply it. Two, creating this local Roma NGO so that the most powerful, the most articulate educators had a forum to continue their advocacy with the government. And then three, trying to get several of them hired by the government as Roma health mediators. So these were small steps to create a structure that could continue this kind of work. But the trust issues will never go away overnight when they're so warranted.
Actually, we have a question here. Yeah.
Thank you. Wonderful presentation. I liked it very much, particularly the Romania one, because we just started in Romania also to work with a couple of communities in social mobilization. Mm. So I know how difficult the population is to approach. You said you did a lot of work with the health mediators, particularly on detection to identify suspects. We also saw the problem. That's the first question. That the treatment scheme is different, as for example in Africa and Latin America, where the 2 months you can do ambulatory, and in Romania it's compulsory in the hospital, and that is very, very difficult for Romas because of cultural reasons, also because of discrimination.
Yeah.
So I was wondering if you succeeded in convincing or negotiating with the program in a model of community dots. That's the first question.
Right.
And the other one is I'm curious to know if you work only with the health mediators or if you also have tried to organize leaders within the Roma population.
Sure. I'll start with the second one. We wanted originally to work almost entirely with health mediators because we thought, well, they're staff, they're sustainable, they're there. There weren't enough. Mm-hmm. So most of the peer health educators that I talked about were newly brought into this kind of work. They were identified by community leaders and by NGOs like Romani Chris, and they were new actors in health. Mm-hmm. And we advocated for some of them to be hired by the MOH, some as mediators. Some of them went on to work in their NGO. But there weren't enough mediators, and that was a drawback, that it was a great program, but it didn't have enough people in it. To go back to your first question, it was not easy to negotiate changes in the way treatment was done. We were able to, sort of on almost a case-by-case, community-by-community basis, get permission for the peer health educators to be involved in continuation phase treatment in the community. But it was very much seen as a pilot thing, as a temporary thing. So we weren't able to make those changes in the treatment protocols that you're talking about.
Okay, but in the pipeline, there is an opening.
There is for others. We're not working on that anymore. There is for you, perhaps, and for other organizations to continue to work on that.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Just before we take more questions, I'm just going to ask if there's a presenter from TB Photo Voice here in the audience. If not, we have more time for questions. Okay, I'm sorry. If you could speak, come to the microphone and go ahead.
Excuse me.
Hi. My name is Nicole Delaney, and I work with the Global Fund, so it's quite exciting to hear that some of the funding is going to your NGO. And my question goes also to the question of sustainability that was raised by a colleague on the other side of the room.
Mm-hmm.
You may know that the Global Fund also finances NGOs and community-based organizations directly. So that means the actual activities. And what we had already in round 7 now was this wonderful new concept of not only providing funding for the strengthening of health systems, but also community systems. But from the way that I understood your talking, I don't see how the access to this funding works easily in practice. So we have the policy level opening.
Right.
The funding is there. On Saturday, for example, we heard that only 14% of Global Fund funding is actually going to TB programs of all of the funding that the Global Fund gives. But it seems to me that something is missing then to get some money directly out to the community-based organizations. And I was wondering if you could perhaps say a few words from your opinion, what doesn't work, what the Global Fund should be addressing. Just from how you've spoken, it seems that we won't get to the communities unless we have the intervention, for example, of an international NGO that will make the link between the community activities and the National TB Program.
Right.
The funding goes through the CCM.
Right.
So how do we get that link, and will it always take an international NGO in the country? And if so, do we not need a more concerted effort with WHO to get these links happening on a more systematic basis?
Well, I think it's a fantastic question, and it's one that I've been talking about to people, including people in this room, that the NGOs on CCMs are those like us. They're not those community actors that will be there, that are from there. And I think one thing that certainly it's incumbent upon us as international NGOs to help our local partners get to the table and to really identify those that are credible, dedicated, have the capacity, and help them come on to CCMs or help them be named as subcontractors in implementation. I think in Romania there's actually a great example, and I don't know if there's anyone from Romania here because I'd rather have someone from the country speak, but we, the piece of this program that was Global Fund supported when Doctors of the World was working was an incentives pilot to look at what kinds of incentives could help promote treatment completion in poor communities. That was in the Global Fund round that began in Romania in 2003. In the current round of funding that Romania has, one of the primary implementers is a Roma is a Romanian NGO called the Center for Policy and Social Studies. And when we were phasing out our work, we made a very conscious decision to help them write their proposals, to have them be the implementers, and to shift our role to technical assistance only on a very limited consulting contractual basis. And I think it was an example of stepping aside to let a strong local partner take the lead. And it's not easy to do that from a financial perspective, but it was the right thing to do. So I really think that if the Global Fund can encourage its CCM NGO members to who can you bring to the table, who have you worked with that you trust, that you know is doing good work, and then find ways to have it move from a facilitated entry to leadership from those local NGOs. But I think it's a great direction.
Yes, thank you very much. Congratulations on what seems to be a very well-organized, very well-thought-out program. My name is Thaddeus Penis, and prior to leaving WHO, I used to be the country communication focal point for the Stop TB Partnership. So I'm reassured to see that the principles and ideas that we were putting out 3 years ago when I was still with the partnership is fully embraced. My question to you is one comment and then two questions. The comment I'll say for later. The question is, first, you did your CAP survey. Can you please justify or defend why you selected using posters and other print materials in a highly illiterate mm-hmm. society, one? And then two, can you also please explain why you used a more community-based approach, both in the Mexico situation and here in the Romanian situation, as opposed to a much more national approach, which some NTPs usually want, is a nationwide campaign. Mm-hmm. Can you explain how you were able to make the case to NTPs in the programs mm-hmm. For a more community-based approach?
Sure.
And then I think finally, too, the question of sustainability always comes up. Mm-hmm. And I submit to everyone here to consider this, that no program is ever sustainable as soon as the money is taken away. And that applies not only to communications programs like this, but to the entire program. So I'd love to see a much larger global debate on sustainability, and particularly when it comes to communications programs like this.
Sure. I prefer to explain than defend, because that seems like a more positive approach to it. The sustainability thing, I mean, absolutely. Sometimes when we say that our programs are sustainable, what it means is, you know, we've ended our USAID-funded piece and the Global Fund is now supporting it through local NGOs. And someone's resources are still being poured in. External resources are still required. To go to the two other questions, on materials, and I do apologize for how hard this is to read. The graphics on the bottom one, for example, this was intended to help a community where the CAP showed very limited knowledge of symptoms. So if you see this actual brochure, you don't need to read the words at all. I don't read Romanian, but I was able to immediately understand when we're talking about weight loss, when we're talking about fatigue, when we're talking about the cough, the persistence of it. So it was designed to be very visual. There are words, and there is messaging for two reasons. One, that we did have a quarter or so of the community members who were literate, and often you see it actually in immigrant communities as well. Your literate community members are the ambassadors often for your non-literate community members, particularly their older family members. So we wanted there to be a channel for those who were able to read the messages. And two, these were being distributed through very intense community education sessions. They weren't being handed out. So there was a dialogue that was being led by literate peer health educators, and it was useful for them to have these talking points, these messages available. So that was the reasoning. And the poster, for example, with the gentleman who became our ambassador, his face was out there so much through the film, through media coverage, that we didn't need really any words beyond that one message that we wanted to be sure was on every piece of information. TB can be cured. Going back to your second question on a community versus a national scale approach, there are a couple of reasons for that, one being the nature of the funding we had. So in our Mexico program, the funding was actually targeted to Chiapas. And I think that it was appropriate there because Mexico has such a strong national, the Bandera Blanca campaigns, the community campaigns. It was more important to identify which communities are being left out of that current national approach and come up with something targeted to help those communities move towards where the rest of the country has gotten. So that's why it was a very specific community-tailored approach. In Romania, it was a pilot, really. It was the first time that ACSM approaches were being applied in the TB control program there. So we had to prove ourselves a bit, and we worked with the NTP to identify where they wanted us to do this. So some of our educational work there was national, creating a curriculum for teachers, for example, to use, or a national IEC media campaign. The Roma work was seen more as a test, as a pilot, and so it was done in communities in Bucharest and in rural parts of Romania that were predominantly Roma. It was not because we hadn't had a track record of showing that such a campaign could work in such communities, we needed to prove it first. So I hope that addresses your questions.
I think, I do want to move ahead. We should have time for questions and answers at the end as well. But one last question, and let me just also ask again, is there anyone from Photo Voice in the audience? Okay, great. So go ahead.
And I'll be here, and I'll be glad to talk to you after the session.
Hi. Okay. I have two questions related to the Roma case study. And one was if you could tell us a little bit more about this support and supervisory mechanism that you had for the community volunteers and the extent to which they've been integrated into the national program. And the second is when we compare the community workers in the Roma case study vis-a-vis the ones from the Mexican case study, we find that they are more broad-based, their scope is broader, whereas in Romania it's very specifically TB. But then given the background of the Roma population group that you were working with, I can imagine that the demand for other services mm-hmm. have improved as well. So in what's your direction in that sense?
Sure. The first question... Let me start with that second one, actually. We definitely recognize that TB was a symptom, if you will, of a larger lack of access to information, a larger mistrust of health services. So the Roma who were hired as mediators then ended up working on a much broader range of health issues. The Roma NGO that we helped establish, which has applied for local funding, is tackling many things beyond TB. For example, one of their first successes was actually having a dental service point created in a community that had never been anywhere near that particular kind of care. So they're not limited at all to tuberculosis, and I think that's as it should be. So our work was quite narrowly focused. The work that partners have continued to do on their own has been broader. And I'm sorry, I'll have to ask you to repeat your first question for me.
The supervisory mechanism.
Right, thank you.
A larger support mechanism.
Yeah. So we definitely wanted to keep our team, the Doctors of the World team, small and really pour the resources into the peer health educators. But they need support and supervision. So we had a small team of Roma staff who were leading the project, were very much from the communities themselves. And if you see on the top picture, the older gentleman sitting down is our ambassador, the cured patient. The person next to him, Georgel, was the leader of the project, very much came from the communities we were working with. And we organized meetings of the peer health educators on a regular basis to talk about, what was working, what wasn't working. the staff were there for many of the initial community education sessions so that it wasn't a matter of you've been trained, now do it on your own. There was feedback. And sometimes, you know, there was feedback that needed to be constructive because the script wasn't being followed. Or if you have a really heated debate on whether TB is curable, are people leaving the room with the right information? You know, to really make sure that those educators were able to do what they set out to. So it was really a matter of regular meetings, dialogue and discussion about what was working.
Thanks. Excellent. Well, thank you very much for sharing the experiences of Doctors of the World. Our next speaker is Marlon Villanueva. He is the Senior Advocacy Communication and Social Mobilization Technical Advisor for World Vision in Papua New Guinea. And he's going to share a presentation on linking with civil society to strengthen DOTS in Papua New Guinea.
Thank you, Nisha. Good morning to everybody. I cannot remove the smile in my face. Half of the people in the room are my colleagues. It's like attending my birthday party. Well, anyway, I'll be discussing successful models of community and partner involvement in TB control. And apart from that, I'll be discussing principles and goals in engaging the communities, because it is equally important for you guys or for development partners to know and determine principles in engaging communities, and for you to determine maturity of the community, at the same time identify activities and strategies which will fit for the levels of the community that you are involving in. These are models that are being implemented in Papua New Guinea as part of the Global Fund Round 6 that started in 2007, which is now about more than 1 year and 2 months in implementation. So before I start, one of the questions that is frequently asked, where do you work? I'm now based in Papua New Guinea. Where is that? Is that a country? Is that part of Africa? So to show you, Papua New Guinea is the northern part of Australia, besides Indonesia. And this is a macro view of Papua New Guinea, and the capital is Port Moresby. With the profile of the largest developing country in the Pacific, and the country has 600 islands with a total population of 7 million, 20 provinces and 87 districts, with more than 800 dialects that translates to different cultures, with rugged terrain, lack of road system. Usually planes are the one being used as a mode of transportation to go to one province to the other. Inadequate health infrastructure, resources of 700 health facilities for 7 million population. Extreme population dispersion. 82% of the total population is spread out to 450,000 square kilometers. Population density is less than 13 per square kilometers. And serious risk in law and order situation, which is now really deteriorating. I myself had several experience in mugging and got held up many, many times. And with a 56% adult literacy rate. So these profiles, most of them are synonymous to our barriers to communications, actually. So if you feel like you're Indiana Jones or 007 James Bond, come to Papua New Guinea. So basically, the talk will be evolving in these five bullets: definitions, basic values, principles, goals, and models. The program has defined community-based organization as a collective of community-based individuals or groups of various sectors of the society volunteering their services in raising awareness on TB, identification of symptomatics, treatment partners, default tracing, supervisory of daily drug intakes, monitoring adverse effects, advocating for support for the welfare of TB patient, and resource mobilization in the latter part of your organizing. This is just a minimum list. You could add on the list, or you could add on the bullets if you want. But for the program, this is the focus of the program that we are organizing. So basic values that should be considered. There are three tripods in community development. One, it should be treated as a human right. Everybody has the right to be treated. Everybody has the right to access to information. Everybody has the right to quality treatment. Social justice. There should not be an indiscriminate treatment for everybody, whether age, sex, gender, or whatsoever. And social responsibility. Everybody has a role in TB control. Principles, people's participation or people's ownership. Your project or program will continue to be a facility-based program if the community participation is not there. Experiential learning. It doesn't mean that if you fail the first time, it doesn't mean it's the end of the story. It's a process, it's a continuous process and a learning together with the community. Self-reliance. Everybody has the right for self-independence. Community development or community organizing is a means and not the end. It's the same strategy such as PPM, dots in the workplace. It is only a means, or it is a strategy where you are targeting a certain goal. Communities like individuals and groups are different and unique. You have to respect diversity. Community structure should be kept as simple as possible. You don't discuss log frame, you don't discuss planning, highly technical planning or outcome or impact at the community level. To continue, diversity in the program approach should be respected. There should be a broad representation or interagency values. There should be representation from different sectors, whether youth, women, senior citizens, so on and so forth. Barriers to communication must be broken down. What are the typical examples of barriers? Political positions sometimes is a barrier. External people, such as us, are barriers for communication oftentimes. Communities like individuals have the right to self-determination or independence. Social needs are basis for organization. An NGO dictating a community is not a social need for you to organize. Start from what is already existing. So the overall goal in community mobilization or forming a CBO is people's empowerment, building relatively permanent structure for sustainability, people's organization, and building alliances or networks, again, for sustainability. Improving quality of life, which is the gold standard in development work, and population democracy, which is the ability of the community to speak on their own. So this is one of the highlights of the presentation, stages of group development, basically. As I have said during the beginning, you have to determine different stages for you to know the maturity and activities and strategies of a particular community. Many of you might have seen this from your university days. Stage one, which is the forming stage. Forming stage, this is a typical example for this, is if you are forming a group, one or two group, it can be present in the workplace, it can be present in the community, it can be present in relationships. In the relationship, let's say, girl meets guy, oh, how are you, what's your name? This is the exploratory stage. This is where the community try to They are kind of guarded, often guarded with their behaviors. The storming stage. This is one of my favorite stage, actually. It's like meeting your mother-in-law. Oftentimes we are fixated with this stage, and the communities oftentimes are, I don't want to follow that leader is from the highlands, I am from the central province. The norming stage, this is actually the level of the maturity of the community is now present, where they accept the structure, they accept the leadership, they accept the strategies and the performance. We start to work together. These are the details of the definition. Per stage, teams are often guarded and cautious on their interaction, not really knowing what to expect. They explore boundaries and acceptable behaviors. Behaviors expressed in early stage are generally non-committal. Do I want to be part of this group? Do I know this group? Will I benefit from this group? So these are the common questions that they ask in the forming stage. Some questions: do I want to be part of this team? Will I be accepted? Who is the leader? Is the leader competent enough? I'm more senior than him. Why is he the leader? The storming stage. Stage characterized by competition, which is very, very common in the workplace as well. People, there are new persons, people feel that they are threatened, that this person might replace them. Relationships among teams are strained. There are various degrees of conflict, but basically revolves around issues of power, leadership, decision-making. Conflict cannot be avoided at this stage. This stage is the most crucial stage the team must work through. Usually, with the community, you start with 50 members. At this stage, you'll end up with 20 members, 15 members. Half of them usually fall out at the storming stage. You don't put up structures at this stage. You don't do elections at this stage. These kind of things. Commonly asked questions: how will I seek my autonomy? How much control will I have to others? Who do I support? Who supports me? How much influence do I have in this group? The norming stage, characterized by cohesiveness among team members. After working through the storming stage, team members discovered that they, in fact, have a common interest. The level of maturity of the community you'll see in their conversation. Let's sit down. Let's talk about solutions. What is the problem? What are possible solutions? They learn to appreciate their differences. They work together, and they solve problems together. This is your lean and mean stage, or lean team, or the dream team already. This is the stage where you implement structures already and increase capacity of your community. Commonly asked questions: what kind of relationship can we develop? Will be successful as a team? How do we measure up to other teams? What is my relationship with the team leader? And the performance. This is the result of working together for the first three stages, but at this time, team members have learned how to work together as fully functioning team. They can be defined, tasks can be defined, they can work a relationship successfully, they can manage their conflicts, they can work together to accomplish their mission. Usually, the desired outcome or desired output of the project usually is appreciated at this stage. So this is after I have presented the stages, this is one of so many models that you could use in forming CBOs, the pyramid scheme. A pyramid scheme, if you're familiar with networking, it is a scam during the early 2000s where one will initiate a non-sustainable business model that involves an exchange of money primarily for enrolling other people into the scheme without any product or services being delivered. The only flaw in this scheme is there is no end benefit. The money simply travels up to the chain and only the originator wins in swindling his followers. But what about using this model in TV programming? This is a pyramid scheme that we used in one of the districts, which is the pyramid scheme model in tuberculosis. This is being implemented in Morobe province in Papua New Guinea. It can be model A, where a treatment partner or leader, where the health unit identifies a committed leader, or model B, where a previous a former patient can also be a member of this pyramid scheme, or model C, so on and so forth. You can play around with different models with this pyramid scheme, as long as development of second liners is there. It is defined as a more sustainable model that involves people's energy and commitments for enrolling other people into the scheme without any monetary incentives. It banks on available resources, promote leadership, and help develop second liners or leaders to achieve a common purpose in a most effective way, because the community themselves are the one identifying their leaders, not the healthcare workers, not the NGOs, not the development agencies. Basic criteria that we use in this pyramid scheme: good relationship with the health unit and community, basic TB training that is provided by the Department of Health, a good track record of committed TB volunteer, resident of the community, no conflicting interest or political gain, leadership capabilities. Some trainings that we do provide coming from the project are trainings on NTP and DOTS, leadership trainings, communications trainings. These are interpersonal communications, training on how to utilize IEC, flip charts, so on and so forth, organizational development to increase their capacity, to legalize them for the government, for them to be identified by the government. We develop vision goals for these communities, basic community organizing, and health education package. Some of the activities that they are conducting currently are TB awareness campaigns during World TB Day, house-to-house visits for case findings, village or TB assembly information campaigns, or local radio hostings, because one of the networks for communication in Papua New Guinea, the most effective way is radio and newspaper only, not TB. There's only one station of television there, only present in the central capital. Fundraising activities for TB patients, community TB classes, and distributions of IECs. These are some examples of some IECs that we are producing in the local dialect. Some activities that we are conducting, visiting schools. Some of the posters. Sorcery is widespread in PNG. Belief that if you are sick, it is caused by witchcraft, or local term is puri-puri. Some of the activities in partnership with communities, this is a concert tour of DOTSI. And this is the Secretary of Health signing a pledge of commitment together with the organization and some community activities. This is a graphical representation of one of the areas that we covered under the Global Fund. We covered during the initial years two areas, which is NCD or National Capital District and Morobe Province. This is the Morobe Province in one of the districts. And in relation to the Global Fund that I have said, these are the indicators in relation to CBO formation. Formation of 16 CBOs in different districts, provide enablers to volunteers, assist formation of patient support groups, train and supervise government and officers and senior pastors for ACSM, conduct quarterly meetings with senior pastors, organize World TB Day events, both national and local level, advertise in newspapers, being the one of the channels for communications, print advocacy and publicity materials, produce, broadcast radio drama series, which is one medium which HIB people or HIB groups are using, drama series, radio drama series. And some of the existing networks and facilities in community work that facilitates our work that is present and positive about Papua New Guinea. It has an extensive church network that is already in existence. 23 churches run 46% of the health facilities. The umbrella organization is the Church Medical Society. There are more than 100 pastors that exist in 87 districts, even more than the figures of the healthcare workers. Churches are very influential to the community, strong presence of civil societies. And some of the other strengths are tribal chieftains are responsible for communities. If you solicit the support of the tribal chieftain, the whole of community will support you. Well-represented local-level government, other groups, teachers, cured TB patients, and a very supportive private sector. Digicel is one of the biggest telecommunication in the Pacific. Coca-Cola supporting our advocacy activities, and Toyota Motors has recently launched a TB in the workplace policy in partnership with this program. Issues and concerns. Some of this has been mentioned during the profile. Non-availability of basic services and infrastructures for health, which remains to be a barrier for us. Security for the whole country is deteriorating. Relatively sparse and dispersed scattered populations, making it difficult for advocacy and expensive for production of IEC because we have to translate and distribute IEC in far-flung areas. Road system is also poor. Most areas can only be reached by plane. Capacity of staff, where the standard bar is very, very low because university graduate students are usually fly out of the country after finishing their course. Logistic, drug reagents, and other consumables are often delayed because of poor transportation system, accessibility in all forms, access to credible report, access to information, care, and even justice is a big, big issue in the country. So let me end with this slide. There should be a paradigm shift in development organizations such as us. We know, they don't know. This is the common mindset of development workers. They are the problem, we are the solution. We come in thinking that we are the Messiah, we do have the saving torch in going to the community. But the paradigm shift should be, they know, we don't know. Community has been existing for thousands of years. We are sometimes the problem, and they are the solutions. Let us treat TB not as a figure, not as a disease, but a person, and there will be no more problems in compliance. With that, I give my thanks.
Thank you, Marlon, for sharing that overview of ACSM activities and sort of the basis or foundation for it. Are there any questions for Marlon at this point? Please, and if you wouldn't mind coming to the microphone.
Please be good.
Yeah. Thank you for the nice presentation, mainly academic approach. I know there's some communities very difficult to communicate, especially the province in Papua New Guinea, the Bougainville Island. There is some areas is fighting zone. It's called no-go zone. How practically you approach to these communities?
Basically, the answer to that, we haven't reached Bougainville for the NTP expansion yet. As I've said, we are only in the first year of expansion, and this is the Global Fund project in partnership with the Department of Health is currently in the first year, and we are only present in two provinces. And last October, we just expanded to three more provinces, and based on the epidemiology and number of TB cases and population. And Bougainville is, if I'm not mistaken, part of the year three expansion or year four.
Any other questions for Marlon? Please. And actually, if you wouldn't mind telling everyone who you are and where you're from as well.
Good morning. I'm Thelma Tupasi from the Philippines. Marlon and I used to work together in the Global Fund projects in the Philippines.
She's
and
my
it's
mentor.
Really, really hard to see him go. But anyway, he's done so well. My question, after congratulating Marlon for a beautiful presentation, really is, do community volunteers in your program, are they given any compensation of sorts for them to be able to continue doing the work they do, which takes time out of income-generating activities that they should be doing to support their families? We have been... we have been struggling with this idea of how to keep the community volunteers doing their thing without compensation, which is really the thought of many governments. When you volunteer, no compensation.
Well, the answer is both yes and no. In the urban setups, even way back before the project started, there has been several models of community involvement done by the HIV project. And unfortunately, they're giving away money. And the culture now, or the belief now, or the trend now, is the community is already expecting money. We are trying to push for a non-monetary incentive, such as training, capacity building, bags, trips, or T-shirts, or whatever, or food baskets. But unfortunately, this has been a barrier for us because communities even threat to boycott or not to participate anymore in the TB program if we will not give money. So with this, this becomes a barrier. But for in relation to rural areas or rural in the highlands or in areas where there is no NGOs present and we are the first one who have immersed in that community, it is still possible that there is no monetary incentives for these communities.
We have one more question.
Yeah, thank you for the presentation. I'm Isoi from Kenya. Now, my issue is on the development of IC materials. Given that you have said that you have about 800 dialects, I don't know which one you use because there's too many. But then, do you normally have, let's say, like the formative research? Do you pilot your IC materials before you come up with the final product? And how do you work with the national TB program? How do you connect yourself?
The essence of the Global Fund is we are working in spirit of additionality. I myself is a technical advisor for ACSM. My counterpart is the health promotions director. All products being produced under World Vision is being cleared. The clearinghouse is the health promotion department under the Department of Health. So this is in collaboration with the Department of Health. And all IEC materials underwent pre-testing and even post-testing. And currently we are doing a flip chart and doing several IEC materials such as brochures and instructional material for the illiterate. There are also two existing programs under the World Vision Pacific Development Office, which is under the literacy program. And there are heaps of IEC already being produced for the illiterates. And one of the bases also for producing IECs are CAP surveys that was previously produced by AusAid. So these are bases for, that's why we came up with sorcery, because sorcery belief is very high in PNG. They even often kill or fight with other village because they accuse the other village of causing the TB disease in their own village.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Marlon. I'm going to ask one last time if there's a representative from TB Photo Voice present. Okay, so what I'm going to do is actually just take a moment to speak about the PhotoVoice project, because I think it builds very nicely on Marlon's last slide, which talked about the community is not the problem, and we, the NGOs, are not the solution, but really the idea that the communities themselves have the solution and the ability to and the right to be involved in developing the solutions to TB in their country. And I do regret that the representatives from TB Photo Voice aren't here. It's a project that was developed in 2005 essentially to empower people affected by TB, and that includes patients and family members. And I won't be able to do it justice, so I do encourage you to go visit, to Google them and visit their website. But essentially what they do is give grants to certain communities where they provide TB patients and family members with cameras and some training to go ahead and document their lives and the impact of TB on themselves, their family, and their communities. And it's really been incredibly motivational, the level of empowerment that comes into those communities that are really, as we heard at the very beginning, underprivileged and underserved and have a real history of discrimination against them. So I regret that we don't have a voice from the community, which was my original intention, of someone affected by TB to share their experiences here. So I apologize for that, but do encourage you to go visit their website. So our final speaker then comes from PATH in Kenya, and I'm going to ask Ronald Ngiela to speak to us about community involvement in scaling up integrated TB and HIV services in Kenya.
Most of what I'm going to say has actually been covered by the previous speakers. I wonder how the coincidence was. The only thing that we tend to stress on in Kenya that is a bit different from what we got from Romania is that we don't say TB can be cured. For us, we have changed it to TB is curable. That is the main message. But most of what you are going to do is just basically what you've already said. Just to go briefly about Kenya. Kenya is one of the high burden countries, the 22, and globally we are 13th, and in Africa we are 5th. And we have a case notification of 338 per 100,000. We are trying to beat the deadline of elimination of one case per million, and we are still somewhere at around 3,000 per million. I don't know if we'll make it with the Stop TB partnership. Concerted efforts using a partnership has made Kenya achieve the 70% case detection rate. This was in the WHO report of this year. And we are just very close to getting the cure rate of 85. Although, again, the goalposts were shifted from cure rate to success rate. So actually, our success rate is close to that. We have a very high co-infection rate of 48%. And this is what made us think of concerted efforts towards TB and HIV as one thing. To spearhead this, PATH, in collaboration with our NTP, which has now been elevated to be a division within our ministry, thought of using certain measures to reach the community and make sure the community is involved in TB work. So we are using the mass media, TB in the workplace, magnet theater, community leader sensitization, and school health programs. The whole idea is to increase demand for TB services through increasing knowledge and mobilizing the community to build their capacity. We did not have a CAP survey like the Romania case, so we went a different way. We developed a communication and advocacy strategy, which we used our program officers and partners in several meetings, both at national, provincial, and district, several concerted meetings to identify gaps into the TB program and see where we can reach the community. Now, once the gaps are identified, this is where the NGOs pick activities and the CSOs, together with the DLTLD itself. So we made sure the gaps are put into the annual operational plans, then we use activities there to address SCSM. So if we take the mass media as one of the approaches we have used, we used an approach called, we called it the doctor on call approach. We've also tried the radio spots, TV and newspaper adverts, and the World TB Day. Before the World TB Day, we get that week of the World TB Day and try to feature TB prominently out there by printing a lot on TB. How do we choose the media to put our messages? We use the TB burden in the country. So given that this was PATH's role, PATH picked on three provinces that were having high burden. And for the radio stations, we used the Stedman, the renowned researcher in communication, to identify for us listenership and the popularity of the stations. So we picked on the ones that they had given us as the most popular. Now, to get there, first, we have to identify the messages we want to put across. So these messages also cannot be a one-person idea. So again, partnership, PATH together with DLTLD and other partners had several meetings using the gaps identified in the communication and advocacy strategy to put messages, picking certain areas that were identified as the gaps. So the messages were identified to address the basics of TB and HIV, what is the relationship, the treatment, the duration, the types, adherence to TB treatment, what should we do about that, and there we were addressing specifically DOT, the co-infection, the process of diagnosing TB, and the prevention of TB HIV in special groups. This one we were specifically talking about children and mothers. The languages we have used are English, Kiswahili, which is a mixture of Arabic and the African Bantu languages, and that's the commonly spoken language in Kenya. And because the stations, I said, were picked, we picked actually six of them. Now the six are also spread within the country, and they address different languages. So we went to vernacular of a certain region where the station is popular. 12 weeks was taken to cover all this, and we tended to concentrate certain topics around the World TB Day. For sustainability, just to avoid a question after this, we made sure we are not leading this as PATH when it comes to actually passing the message. We use the ministry officials. And here, not just any ministry official. We start right from the policymakers downwards up to the implementers on the ground. So all across, all of them will get a chance to go to the radio station and speak there. We blend this with the NGOs, and every time they have to be a PATH official. Once in a while, we would get one of the other NGOs called IMC that is International Medical Corps. They are doing a lot in one of our big slum areas, the popular Kibera, and they work with the TB patients. For advocacy issues, when our topic is basing on advocacy, we tended to involve the CSOs. And here specifically, we are using what we are calling CANCO, that is Kenya AIDS NGO Consortium, and NEFAC, which is a network of people living with HIV and AIDS in Kenya. These ones have TB ambassadors whom they have trained, and some of them are actually TB patients, and others are co-infected. So when they're in the radio stations, the ones will talk and they'll be asked questions. Again, we can also pick former and current TB patients. One of them is around here, who was very vocal. In the doctor on call approach, you go to the station, we are given about between 30 minutes to 1 hour, but we take the shortest time possible to pass the message, about 15 minutes, and the remaining time, we leave it for call-ins. And people call, we answer all their concerns, and sometimes they even go beyond what we are talking about that day. We will not brush it aside. If there's time, we talk about it. If it's not time, we only direct them on where to get the information, the nearest district headquarter, where to get the information from. That was the doctor on call approach. But we also had like power breakfast. Power breakfast, we get our prominent people, like ministry officials and policymakers, who will go during break time, not 10 o'clock break, but 8 o'clock tea break. Around that time, usually most Kenyans are on the jam, and they have their radios tuned on. In the houses, the housewives also have their radios tuned on. So somebody will be talking about TB, and people are able to call him, and he answers, or her. Usually they are moderated by the radio stations. Around World TB Day, again, this one, instead of PATH doing this, we did this through a CSO, which is purely AIDS-related and TB-related. And everybody came together, right from WHO up to the implementers down on the ground. They talk on TB, the media there in full glare, and pick up the messages to blow it up. Then the following day, they're in the news. When we are doing the radio approach, how do we gauge the community actually responding to what we are doing, or how are they listening? We give them a chance to call back, and we answer the questions. There is an email address given at the radio station. Some people also send their messages. Text messages, when you're in the station, there's one radio station mobile phone. They are given the address, and people send in, and then we pick them and answer. Some messages come later at the end of the presentation. We accumulate all of them, go answer them, and the next time we start from there, answer whatever was outstanding and was not answered. Overall, we did about 60 of them in a period of 6 months, that is 2007 to 2008. One of the ways we use this also to help people is we have a community called the Maasai in Kenya. These are very ambulatory people. They move depending on where the grass is green for their cows. And at one time, I remember I'm the one who was at the studio, a Maasai man called from an area very far from his home area. The wife had TB. They had moved from where they usually get their TB drugs to another point, and they did not know where to get the TB drugs. So somehow with this small pocket radio, he was hearing this, and he called in to find out what he could do. After he moved from his place, he had spent so much Kenya shillings looking for any other alternative medicine. So he had spent something close to 3,000 euros, or about $4,000. We managed to direct this person to our district coordinators. He connected there, and just a week ago, I've called the person, and the wife actually completed treatment and is currently also on ARTs. Another approach on the radio is the radio spots. Now, the radio spots, we develop spots that are addressing, again, the key issues on TB. This ran for about 40 to 55 seconds. They have clear messages. The only thing we do is we develop them in-house, partners, the Ministry of Health officials, and path. We pre-test them, review the time it's occurring, the content, and the voice of play. Is that what we had wanted it to portray? Is it giving a different message? When we're pre-testing it, we go to different communities with different translations. Is it giving out the message we wanted? And what did they want? Then we go back and review, and it comes out as radio spots. Then they are aired at certain times. The choice of time, again, is an issue because sometimes certain times are more expensive than others, but that's not the big deal. The issue is what time are people able to listen? So depending on the group we want to target, we choose according to the Stedman monitoring system. Language, again, English, Kiswahili, and vernacular, depending on the radio station we have picked on. Somehow, we are still going on with this, and after using the more popular radio stations, this time we want to move on to the more marginalized radio stations, because most of them, again, are in the hard-to-reach areas, and if you depend on the popular radio stations, we may never get them. So we want to go to the marginalized ones. To blow up TB, we sponsored media houses in Kenya to go out and visit certain chosen areas. We picked hard-to-reach districts. We picked areas that were having high burden of TB, and we picked on certain NGOs and FBOs that are doing TB work. So they go there, pick on patients, pick on implementers, pick on administrators, talk about TB, then it is put in the papers, it's put in the news, and these are media houses. They bring up stories. They can also take a 2-3-page supplement and write about TB. Usually we concentrate this around the World TB Day. Our future plans, as I've said, is we want to go to the marginalized media houses, but our biggest headache is how to make an evaluation on this, because we've done a small evaluation, as I'll show you in front here, but to make it more community-based and be sure it is really the community that we are talking about, that were actually listening and they're actually responding, we need a more community-based evaluation, which is fairly costly. I'll jump that in the interest of time. Let me go to TB in the workplace. This, we chose companies and small companies that are employing people that are vulnerable to TB. And we wanted to build on already existing programs, like HIV already have workplace programs. Health and safety have workplace programs. And we also have welfares and circles as organizations. So if you use their model to bring in the TB content, we were able to reach the community within the workplace and the immediate community. So we went down and made training to chosen people within the community, workplace community, and called them TOTs, Trainer of Trainers. So we trained them from the national level together with the DLTLD. Then they now take up the role of training under the supervision of our local implementers and our local administrators, the district TB coordinators. They become peer educators within their community. So they now take up the role, and we give them training modules which they use for training their colleagues. The idea, again, is to increase demand. But how do we choose the companies? Do we just go to the nearest? Again, the TB HIV burden. The areas, not necessarily the company, the TB HIV, but which area? Now the companies in that area. And where there's already an existing program that you can ride on. The participants to attend, because you cannot close, the companies depend on profit. So the participants are chosen by the company. And so far, we've trained 635 TOTs from 40 companies. We have another approach called the Magnet Theater. The Magnet Theater is magnet just as the name suggests. They station somewhere, make a troop of about 5 to 10 people. They are given TB content. After they have been trained, TB content, they act a play, and people are attracted to them to listen, and they ask questions. They don't move. This is to limit on the coast, so they're in certain areas. So we spread this across the country. And so far, we have recruited 47 groups with 8 to 10 troops in each. So they are in certain areas. We may intend to scale up or change the strategy that they move. This depends on cost. They're moving, if they are to move, we are thinking they move to schools, the nearest schools. We have a fourth approach, which is the school children. We are using the school children to sensitize on TB and HIV. Here we are thinking the school children are actually the best agents of change, and they are found in every household and are easy for us to retrieve defaulters. To get the program running, we developed a training module, something we use for sensitizing, and we kind of segmented the training into national, provincial, and district. So the people to attend are the policymakers at that level, plus the implementers at every level. A guideline was developed, and this guideline is what we used to sensitize both the people we will be implementing, especially the health educators and the education officials who would get access to the schools. Then they would be supervisors from every level. But we insisted on a more academic approach that we'll be able to evaluate later. So we wanted to use a questionnaire to get the knowledge at the time we are starting, so that later when we'll be evaluating, we'll find out, is there any impact? Again, the issue of whether it's community evaluation and school evaluation will come in. We've so far done about 977,000, close to a million. The countrywide, we are expecting to cover about 3 million. But preliminary data on the pretest, where we were to get the gaps or where to stress more on what we want to teach, was that 48% of the pupils knew TB is caused by bacteria. But interestingly, 30% did not know the cause. And the answer was, I don't know. 75% knew the TB is airborne. A good percentage knew the symptoms of TB, but they did not know at what point do we say now, this one needs to seek health assistance for the disease. And only 40% knew the treatment is about 6 to 8 months. 41% knew the diagnosis is done through testing the sputum, but 31% said it's blood test. Now, that graph was more of a baseline as well as an evaluation of whether our radio program was actually listened to. And we found that there are so many actors who are giving lessons on TB and HIV in the schools. So the majority were saying they haven't heard about TB from school lessons. But a good number also have heard TB from the radio program, radio sports, TV sports, and TV program. Yes, but the gaps I've said behind here remained. So now in the teaching, we have to stress on the gaps. The last one, which we are using, is community leaders' sensitization. Again, to increase the demand from the community to ask for TB services. How do we choose the people to talk to? This is very close to what we just heard from PNG. We also use small-scale business owners, the religious leaders, administrators, the local journalists, community group leaders, and provincial administrators. We use them now to sensitize on TB. When you come to the national office, we only go and listen. but now they are the ones who actually do the sensitization. But how do we do it? We give the group, we put them in groups of, say, 10 people. First of all, we segment them into, go to a district, put them in terms of divisions, which is a smaller administrative locality. Then that's about 60 to 100 people. Get the 60 to 100 people and put them in about eight people each. Give them a topic on TB, like duration of treatment, like adherence to treatment, like the causes of TB. Then they discuss, depending on what they believe are the causes of TB and what do they think is the best way to do it. Now they present this, and now the health officials do the corrections and give the correct teaching. This takes just about 2 to 3 hours, the actual correction of the, but we give them about 1 to 2 hours to go through their topics and create the answers. At the end, we made a small questionnaire to find out from them, the community leaders, what do they want to do with the information we've given them. And the majority told us they'll tell others about TB. And actually, that's our intention. We want them to tell the others. We want the others to come for, to come forward. So some of the lessons we learned from this is that all these community approaches can actually propel any other initiative that is there in the health system. Like at the time we were doing this school health, we had an issue with GIGAS in some of our provinces, and that's what was going on, and we could not be given a priority. So the only thing was to ride on the same activity they are having and make sure when they are going to do the GIGAS eradication, education, they talk about TB. Also, the partnership issue, the sector-wide approach, use of the Ministry of Education officials, the administrators, and the local leaders, made us be able to get a good number of people to attend, and hopefully we will be able to get an impact when the evaluation is finally done. One thing I would like to say is that last bullet, as much as we always talk about the formal education, we have other people with the deaf, the blind, the mentally handicapped, and we tried at least 3-4 of them using their local interpreters, and the same content was given to them. We may want to evaluate this and see really the retention of knowledge in them, and if there's any change, they can also bring. The future plans, we would want to scale up this to cover the whole country, because I said we're just choosing certain, like if it's radio stations, we are talking about certain radio stations. If it is schools, we picked certain provinces. If it is community, we picked certain regions. We want to scale up this to cover the whole country. And as we wait, I've seen one of our evaluators is seated somewhere inside here. As we wait for her final evaluation on the activities, we may want to do later, much later, a community evaluation. Is there an impact? Because now this will be so immediate. This thing just ended about 2 months ago. So it will be too immediate to do an impact. So we may do an impact later. But we have challenges as usual. And I would like to acknowledge those people mentioned there for partnership and for moral support to have the exercise completed about a month ago. Thank you.
Thank you, Ronald. What I'd like to do now actually is invite Marlon and Vandana to come back up here in case there's any questions for them, and also ask if there's any questions for Ronald. And I actually have one myself, which is I'm wondering if you can tell us, with regards to the community leaders' sensitization, if you could tell us a little bit about if there was any materials that were provided to them or any sort of tasks that they were given at the end or guidance on how to go back into the community and share this information, and if there's been any evaluation on that particular aspect. Thanks.
Yes, we developed certain materials. What we were using to train them, we actually gave them as brochures to carry home, and they used that to train others. And we gave them a task that everybody now has to report whatever activity they have done. They chose their own community leaders, a particular leader now whom they report to. This person will give it over to the local, the district coordinator. So we will be getting this report back at the national level as it comes back, as it flows back. What activities were done by the community leaders? What did they actually do? How many patients did they refer? How many did they diagnose? How many were eventually diagnosed as TB? And how many were actually smear positive? So we want to see, are they really suspecting TB out of what we taught them? That's.
Thank you. Did you have a question as well?
Thank you again for a beautiful presentation. I'm a bit curious about, it's not sustainability as was asked before of the financial sustainability, but what I'm a bit curious about is how you sustain the process that people are continuing with it. For example, the drama groups. I've experienced with training drama groups, and that goes on perhaps a couple of months, and then particularly if they're not paid, again, the money comes in, but it's also that they just stop it. It's fun for a bit, and then it stops. And the same with the school children. You expose the children once, and do you have any mechanism so they follow, they go on, they have this nice pyramid like we saw in the former presentation, that it's spread, that it's contagious?
A good question. One of the things we've done is, as you saw me saying, there's no time we go out as path to do an activity. Every time we are going out as the health system in Kenya, we'll carry the Ministry of Public Health officials with us, right from development stage up to implementation. We never do it alone. So it's partnership. One way we are looking at it is that sustainability. But again, there's the other side of we are riding on existing programs. When I said like the workplace, we go and get, is there one already existing? So we're only adding a TB content into what is already existing. So whatever source of money they have, when they're out of there, now you have only added something for us to talk about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just one observation. Actually, it's not on the exposition. But I didn't present myself. I'm the chair of the ACSM working group at global level for countries. And I really would like to invite everybody, because I'm sure that except for the speakers, there are many people with experiences at their countries, to be member of the country group. And you can just go to the website of StopTB Partnership, the country level working group, and subscribe yourself. Also thinking of the coming Union Conference only, but also in March there will be in Brazil the Partners Forum, and we really would like to have successful experiences who go beyond only superficial, but experiences like I heard here would be wonderful to invite the best experiences to move forward and exchange. So please subscribe yourself if you're active in one of the fields of ACSM.
Hello, thank you very, very much for the presentations. My name is Renato Pinto from TB Alert. And I myself have been also involved in community work and community mobilization, not only on TB, but more rather on HIV. And in the questions for the three speakers, and I think that all of you talked about IEC materials and how you are using IEC materials to your work. One of the lessons learned, or that I have learned, is that dissemination of information is not enough per se. It's not enough to change behavior, particularly in diseases like TB that are fed by, as you said, structural inequalities. So my question is, one, how this material has been used. Even in your case, Ronald, that is with all the dissemination of information and awareness campaigns, how this has been used accompanied by, is if there is any other work, and how this has been monitored and measured, the impact of this, particularly the OIC materials, to the results that you want to achieve. Thanks.
Thank you. I know that's a difficult area, and we've even seen cases where the IEC materials are misplaced, they're in the wrong places, and in some places they're in the stores, they're not commonly used. But our system is that the supervision is not only from the national level. Supervision goes down up to the district level. So when we are disseminating these things, we send them down to the district level. We are thinking of a different approach where we use the target audience. For example, if the IEC materials are meant for schools, we take it down through schools. If they are meant for community leaders, we take it down through the administration system. We are thinking of that, and that's one of the things we discovered during our community sensitization, because the information is not reaching them. There is the hospitals, and there is the health centers, and they end there. So we would want to segment it in a way that the intended audience is the ones to get, so we get their system.
In relation to IEC production, IEC, I do believe, personally believe that IEC works in synergy. You don't just produce an IEC and let it be. It is combined with different activities as well. Like a poster, it's not a standalone thing that you send out the message and then that's it. It's usually combined with different activities and it works with synergy and creating a sort of branding to the community, bombarding the community with a certain message that you want in relation to your top survey. In terms of activities and skills, we also provide trainings and which is suitable to create the stage for the community community groups that we give them capacity on how they are going to use these certain IECs. For example, a flip chart. Oftentimes we do see that community people they use flip charts, but the quality of the skills that they or the manner that they are using flip charts is very poor. Sometimes we do distribute IECs in combination with skills.
I would just add to that that in addition to things like posters that were meant to be affixed to community points, we really felt that the main channel for disseminating the IEC tools was intensive community dialogue sessions, so that it was never a passive receipt of IEC materials. It was a conversation. But as you said, the behavior change is the most important part, and that's why the IEC was often just the first step, and the next step was, you know, literally helping people to get to care points and then helping them when they came back from them so that it didn't stop with the messages, which are nice, but you need someone, you know, you need support as well, not just a poster.
Yeah, and to add as a final word, the biggest or the most effective IEC is yourself, or the person holding the IEC material.
Hi, I'm Rajitha Bhavarajan from the United States. Thanks to all three of you for very informative presentations. My question actually is for Dr. Kimby, and I was wondering if you could give a little bit more detail about your education that you're providing on HIV to school children. I was wondering sort of what approach you take. Is it stage-based, age-based? Do you cover risk behaviors versus general awareness? I'm coming from a United States context where we're very sort of puritanical about how we approach HIV with school children, and so I'm curious about how you're doing it in Kenya.
Yes, a good one again. We know we also have the controversy of the issue of sex education in our schools. But in Kenya, what we've done in the school health is we've taken a very basic level of HIV and put it in, especially relating to the co-infection, the TB-HIV relationship. That's the message you want out of there, so that we don't get into problems with the policy of sex education. But we put in the content of HIV in context of TB-HIV relationship. Yeah.
Thank you very much to speakers for wonderful presentation. Alexei Karabitsyn, Project HOPE, Tajikistan. To the latest speaker, actually, my question. How did you manage to involve business people into sensitization? From our experience, they are extremely busy and often not responsive. Did you meet any troubles with that? And just please share more your experience about this. Thank you.
Thank you again. Initially, we thought it was going to be difficult. And as usual, we always say the stigma is in our side. It's not really on the other side. What we did was we involved our own health education officials on the ground. And they are down up at the locational level. Now, they also tried, and they thought it's going to be difficult. So what they did was to go to the administrators, the local administrators, the chiefs. So every chief was to identify who is the small-scale business person in their locality. And the word from the chief in Kenya is taken to be the authority. So they are to come, and they are to call off. But again, at the end of it, the appreciation was that it was worth coming, according to them. They also thought it would waste a lot of their time, but they spent their whole day. Others were there from 8 to 6, because there were a lot of questions to ask and so many things to answer. And they knew, once we put it to them, like the things we were learning in the morning about the ventilation, once you tell them, well, if the company is this and closed, and you're making maybe a bakery inside here, you're enclosed all yourself, one has TB, even you, the manager, will get TB, then they all now accept it. So eventually, we succeeded by using the administration to get them. Not forcefully, but to invite them, it looked forceful. But eventually, it looked like it was now voluntary. So they came.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Aprumo, working under Lepra International, based in Bangladesh. It is a common, actually, the community health education is, the outcome is very intangible. It is quite difficult. The CAP survey done pre and post, it also depend, and also the depends on the community or the target population where you do the interactions. It's all, the result is, it depends on. The final outcome, what we are looking for, the case detection, the increase the number of case detection. The most of the study shown is 70% case detected. But I didn't see the how these cases is came forward, because the community education and knowledge is immediately is changed, but the behavior or attitude change is very difficult, and it takes long time to change. It is quite intangible things. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing that comment. I think. That's definitely a challenge, I would say, in the aspect of working with communities that involve community health outreach workers, is measuring the impact and outcomes of these interventions. So I think that's, I'd like to sort of close by saying that that's a challenge in the same way that sustainability is a challenge. Those are sort of buzzwords that we hear and are challenged to meet, but we also have to think about, as our, one of our audience members mentioned with regards to sustainability, that obviously when the money is removed, sustainability is removed. So we have to sort of think about things in a different way, perhaps from the common framework that as international organizations, some of us have thought about TB care and TB control initially. And I think that all of the examples we had from in this symposium really showed the importance of drawing community members in at the beginning, and touched on the real value and importance that community members have in defining TB control strategies and messages in their own country, and how essential they patients and those other people impacted by TB are in really being effective. So I think that our last comment does talk about some of the subtleties about how these things are intangible and hard to measure, but it doesn't mean we should stop trying and stop bringing these people, the people who are affected by TB personally and their communities, into the process. So I really thank you all the speakers for their wonderful presentations, and the audience members for their great questions and comments. So thank you so much.